Well, hello there. It's, what day is it? July 8th, 2023. Time, 18:32 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you. Let's start with a little examination here. From the Oxford Greek Septuagint translation, from Numbers 4 and 3, Oxford Nets Bible, N-E-T-S, which is, there are many Bibles probably called by that name, but this is the Oxford translation of the Greek Septuagint, a fairly recent translation of the Septuagint. It says in verse 3 of Numbers chapter 4, from 25 years and above until 50 years, whereas most translations other than the Septuagint say 30 years. And that's what we'll find in today's study also in chapter 8 of Numbers, verse 24. It mentions the age as being, it's actually 30 years. But in the other place, in this Numbers 4 and 3, in the New World Translation, it says, what does it say, 30? Yeah, that's right. No, today's study will be 25 years in Numbers 8 and 24, but Numbers 4 and 3 says 30 years in most translations. Here it shows in the Greek Septuagint 25 years at Numbers 4 and 3. So the Greek Septuagint always says 25 years, which is fine because it might be true that they started at 25 and then they had more heavy duties, like they had to carry. For example, the Kohathites carried on the shoulder. I thought about that and I thought what I said yesterday was probably wrong. They probably carried with the poles resting on the shoulders because they couldn't carry with their arms all day long. So they'd have to have the poles would be lifted up by hand and put on their shoulders, and then they'd carry them on the shoulder. When they were carrying that's the Kohathites, they did their carrying on the shoulder, it said. Whereas the other Levites, the Gershonites and Merarites, used wagons to carry the tent cloths and the panel frames. So the altar and the holy objects like the tables and the Ark of the Covenant, they were carried on the shoulder using poles, and they were still wrapped up also before they were carried, because the Levites were not allowed to see the holy objects, the things that were part of the tabernacle service. They were not allowed to see the altar of sacrifice. Probably they could see that, but even so, the reason why the Levites were taken for the service of the tabernacle was because the Israelites were not supposed to see these things generally. They weren't supposed to be near to the tabernacle, but the Levites were allowed to be, and they served the priests. So the Levites from 25 years old and upward in the Septuagint, that's the point I wanted to make there. But for today's introduction that we normally do, we want to look at Carl Jung. His quote for today is, "The healthy man does not torture others. Generally, it is the tortured who turn into torturers." A very insightful man, the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, who died in 1961. And there's a video online, I believe it's from 1959, where Carl Jung is explaining a number of things in an interview. So we have actual video footage of Carl Jung. He's recent enough, and he lived long enough for that. Mencius, a Chinese philosopher, said, "The skillful artist will not alter his measures for the sake of a stupid workman." Remarkable statement. Remarkable statement. The skillful artist will not alter his measures for the sake of a stupid workman. Which is, it's equally true to say that a skillful engineer will not alter his design for the sake of a stupid workman. At least that would not be wise. So he wouldn't do that either if he were a conscientious and skillful engineer. Mark Twain said, "No civilization can be perfect. No civilization can be perfect until the exact equality between men and women is included." Now that's a controversial statement, because obviously men and women are not equal. In biology, they're not equal at all. They're very different biologically. So it's a rather controversial statement, but in many senses it has a very high value, that statement. It has a very high value when it's interpreted correctly. Today's song is from Harry Chapin. Harry Chapin died at a very young age. By the way, Jim Croce died when he was about 30 or 31. We're not absolutely sure when he was born. That's why we say that. But Maury, I've forgotten his name again. Oh, yeah, Mühleisen. Maury Mühleisen was only 24 years old when he died, along with Jim Croce and some other people who died also in that same plane crash. So Maury was even younger than Jim when they both died in 1973 on September 20th in that plane crash. What a tragedy that was for Maury also and his family. So that was a terrible thing. But Harry Chapin died in a horrific car crash where a big tractor trailer ran into him from behind, and he died in that crash at the age of 38. Harry Chapin. This song, which I'd like to share with you today. Now, where is it? I can find it. Just looked at it. That's not it. I was just looking at it today. Here it is, I think. Here it is, yeah. In 1974, this is when was Harry Chapin born? Let's find out. He died in 81 at the age of 38. So this is about 7 years before he died. 1974, October, this was released. He died in July of 81. So 6 years and some months later, he died after the release of this song in 1974. It's a song that was number one in Canada on the Adult Contemporary, number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, and number one on the U.S. Cashbox Top 100. So obviously, a very successful song. It's called Cats in the Cradle, 1974.
While I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad, you know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the zoo, little boy to the little man, when you're coming home, Daddy, don't know when, we'll get together there. I'm gonna be like him, yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the zoo, little boy, little man, when you're coming home, Daddy, don't know when, we'll get together then, you know we'll have a good time then.
other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I really like, Dad, is the bar of the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy, too, and a man of the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when. We'll get together then. It occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cats in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy, you and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when. But we'll get together then, Dad. We're gonna have a good time then.
Talented songwriter Harry Chapin. He's definitely missed. In our Born and Raised article, chapter 1, paragraph 7, Windows like Mac OS X, now up until very recently, it seems, it wasn't long ago, Mac OS X was the operating system for Mac OS, and there was no other. It's been around for a long time. And there were different versions of Mac OS X, many different versions, all with different names. There was Lion, and they were named after, there was Snow Leopard, they were named after animals sometimes. There was even a version called High Sierra. They started to name them after mountains. But then, and things, you know, other things like that. But then, or districts, or whatever you want to call it, but then we came into Mac OS 11 and 12 and so on. But Windows, like Mac OS 10, uses proprietary code. Can I shut these down? Yes. It uses proprietary code in its implementation, whereas Unix has been mostly free. It's free meaning open source. That's what free means in the open source world. Okay, it doesn't mean money. You can sell it, but it's often given away for free, but it means free in the sense of open. So everybody knows what the code is. Working on a PDP 7, I worked with PDP 9s and, you know, computers like that in physics labs and in at universities, you know. I mean, doing my master's thesis in as a physicist, and probably I don't think we had that at Atomic Energy. We had a big old IBM computer that was different from that, but I'm sure they had similar things to this mini computer, whatever you want to call it, the PDP 11 or PDP 9 or 7 in this case. A team of Bell Labs researchers led by Thompson and Ritchie, and including Rudd Canaday, developed a hierarchical file system. Listen to this. The concepts of computer processes, if I can read it, and device files, a command line interpreter, pipes for easy inter-process communication, and some small utility programs. So this is explaining in Wikipedia how Ken Thompson helped to create this thing called Unix, and they did it using a PDP 11. I'm trying to think who makes PDP 7. I'm still used to PDP-11 because I've seen that. I must have used one. That's why I keep coming up with. But I mean, I never owned one. These are fairly expensive computers used by universities and things like that to do research. But a PDP-7 is what they use here because this is earlier on when they didn't have the PDP-11, probably. But they developed an hierarchical file system, some way of organizing files. That means the concepts of computer processes and device files. This would be the first time ever, maybe, when these concepts were developed. And device files, in other words, files that have to do with control of devices, it sounds like. A command line interpreter, so to be able to write computer code and then be able to interpret the code so as to perform the calculations that are being instructed, or it could be performing output by printing to a printer or something like that. You need to have code that does that, and you need to be able to interpret the code in order to accomplish it. And then pipes for easy inter-process communication. Yeah, I've never even heard of that idea before, but it's a computer concept. And some small utility programs. Free. Now let's talk about this. The word free refers to the public nature of the source code. And in 1983, Unix triggered the free software movement, which later included Linux and its many distributions. A lawsuit in 1994 against University of California had the result of allowing BSD Unix to be distributed free of charge anywhere. And Linux was underway since 1991. Before 1981, Unix was licensed free of charge by AT&T. See, so it was free before. So because of this lawsuit in 94, BSD Unix continued to be free, as originally Unix had been free. In 1984, AT&T gave up Bell Labs, freeing itself of its antitrust licensing obligations as regards Unix. Well, after that, Bell Labs began selling a proprietary Unix. So, Bell Labs had some kind of inability, you see. Well, Unix had been giving away Unix free of charge. AT&T had been doing that before, and so because AT&T wanted Bell Labs to be able to sell Unix, they, you know, divested themselves of Bell Labs. They freed themselves of their antitrust obligations, whatever that means. Antitrust means that they have a complete dominance of the market, right? They didn't want to be selling something that nobody else could sell, so that it would be an anti-competitive environment. They'd be the only one selling it. They could charge any price they wanted. That wouldn't be good. That's not legally acceptable. You know, to have a monopoly is not allowed. So as long as anyway, I mean, that's generally what antitrust is all about. So it's something like that. But Bell Labs was then allowed to sell a version of Unix at that point. Anyway, eventually, we know it led to Mac OS becoming, or at some point came out of Unix. It's not necessarily before or after. I'm not sure when Mac OS was developed. I think we're going to talk about that maybe here. Or are we? When was Mac OS produced? Did we already talk about it? Yeah, we did. Yeah. I think we already talked about it here. In 2001, Mac OS was developed, right? So quite a bit later, yeah, that's right. We've talked about it. So that's all for the study for today. from the Born and Raised article. Today's proverb, little children, is from Proverbs 22, verse 2. The rich one and the one of little means have met each other. The maker of them all is Jehovah. It's a very good point because, you know, the rich and the poor should not be separate from each other entirely. They have a lot in common. They're all made by Jehovah, all created by the same God. In the book of Numbers now, chapter 8, and Jehovah proceeded to speak to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron, and you must say to him, whenever you light up the lamps, the seven lamps should shine on the area in front of the lampstand. And Aaron began to do so. He lit up its lamps for the area in front of the lampstand, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Now this was the workmanship of the lampstand. It was hammered work of gold. To me, that means they took a piece of gold and they kept hammering it and hammering it and hammering it. There was no welding or anything involved. They just would keep on hammering and hammering until it was formed the way they wanted. Up to its sides and up to its blossoms, it was hammered work, according to the vision that Jehovah had shown Moses. So he had made the lampstand, and Jehovah spoke further to Moses, saying, take the Levites from among the sons of Israel, and you must cleanse them, and this is what you should do to them to cleanse them. Spatter sin cleansing water upon them, and they must have a razor pass over all their flesh, and must wash their garments and cleanse themselves. Then they must take a young bull and its grain offering of fine flour, moistened with oil, and you will take another young bull for a sin offering, and you must present the Levites before the tent of meeting and congregate all the assembly of the sons of Israel. And you must present the Levites before Jehovah, and the sons of Israel must lay their hands upon the Levites, and Aaron must cause the Levites to move to and fro before Jehovah as a wave offering from the sons of Israel, and they must serve for carrying on the service of Jehovah. So, you know, it's going to be a long study if we have to read all that. We won't get through it all. I think it's very useful to read this. I read it already today. And then in verse 24, Jehovah spoke to Moses and says, this is what applies to the Levites. From 25 years old upward, he will come to enter into the company in the service of the tent of meeting. From 25 years old upward, he will come to enter into the company in the service of the tent of meeting. From 25 years old upward, he will come to enter into the company in the service of the tent of meeting, but after the age of 50 years, he will retire from the service company and serve no longer. So we saw that, you know, there were many things that the Levites would do, of course, possibly in addition to their carrying the tabernacle and the objects associated with the tabernacle, like the altar of sacrifice, for example, that had to be carried by the Levites. That was the job of the Kohathites, along with them carrying the table and etc. But any tables and objects like that that were in the tabernacle or anything to do with the tabernacle that was a piece of furniture, they would carry it on their shoulders with long poles through the rings that were on the sides of these objects after they'd been all wrapped up in cloth and sealskin and everything to protect them from, well, keep them from being seen and protect them from the elements. And then the Gershonites carried all the tent cloths and everything like that, cloth materials. And the Merarites carried the panel frames and things like that, right? So, but it doesn't mention other duties in this chapter either that they were doing, but it mentions the procedure for cleansing them and the offerings that were made on behalf of the Levites to make them ready for service. And verse 17, it says, for every firstborn among the sons of Israel is mine. So this was a one-time thing. It's a one-time ceremony that was performed for taking all the Levites for the service of Jehovah at the tent of meeting, to do with the tent of meeting. And it was because on the day of Jehovah striking every firstborn in the land of Egypt, he sanctified the Levites to himself. And they were given, in verse 19, to Aaron and his sons to carry on the service of the sons of Israel in the tent of meeting. Right? And that was because, first of all, to make atonement for the sons of Israel, that no plague may occur. Because, of course, well, that's the main reason, that's the only reason given here, that no plague may occur because the sons of Israel could approach close to the holy place where they weren't supposed to be. So the Levites being present would prevent that. They were there to prevent the other sons of Israel from approaching too close to the tabernacle. So, but this ceremony is talked about here. The Levites lay their hands upon the heads of the bulls in verse 12, and then they offer up the offerings as described there. So feel free to read that completely, little children. And we're going to look at Acts, because we don't have enough time to read all of that today and still get to Acts chapter 17, which is very interesting. We're still not going to get through much of this maybe either, but in our journey to Amphipolis, I'm going to try to get to this speech by Paul the Areopagus in Athens. And Apollonia and came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews, so according to Paul's custom, he went inside to them, and for three Sabbaths he reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and proving by references that it was necessary for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead, and saying, "This is the Christ, this Jesus, whom I am publishing to you." As a result, some of them became believers and associated themselves with Paul and Silas, and a great multitude of the Greeks who worshiped God, and not a few of the principal women did so. But the Jews, getting jealous, took into their company certain wicked men of the marketplace, idlers, and formed a mob and proceeded to throw the city into an uproar. And they assaulted the house of Jason and went seeking to have them brought forth to the rabble, that is, Paul and Silas, when they did not find them. They dragged Jason and certain brothers to the city rulers, crying out, "These men that have overturned the inhabited earth are present here also. And Jason has received them with hospitality, and all these men act in opposition to the decrees of Caesar, saying there is another king, Jesus." They indeed agitated the crowd and the city rulers when they heard these things. And first, after taking sufficient security from Jason and the others, they let them go. Immediately by night, the brothers sent both Paul and Silas out to Berea. And these, upon arriving, went into the synagogue of the Jews. Now the latter were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with the greatest eagerness of mind, carefully examining the scriptures daily as to whether these things were so. Therefore many of them became believers, and so did not a few of the reputable Greek women and of the men. But when the Jews from Thessalonica learned that the word of God was published also in Berea by Paul, they came there also to incite and agitate the masses. Then the brothers immediately sent Paul off to go as far as the sea, but both Silas and Timothy remained behind there. However, those conducting Paul brought him as far as Athens, and after receiving a command for Silas and Timothy to come to him as quickly as possible, they departed. Now, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, his spirit was in him came to be irritated at beholding that the city was full of idols. Consequently, he began to reason in the synagogue with the Jews and the other people who worshiped God, and every day in the marketplace with those who happened to be on hand. But certain ones of both the Epicurean and the Stoic philosophers took to conversing with him controversially. And some would say, "What is it this chatterer would like to tell?" Others, "He seems to be a publisher of foreign deities." We all are familiar with, if we've studied, or even if we just have been going to school in the Western world, we're all familiar with the Greek philosophers. So that's what this is talking about. So this was because Paul was declaring the good news of Jesus in the resurrection. So they laid hold of him and led him to the Areopagus, saying, can we get to know what this new teaching is, which is spoken by you? For you are introducing some things that are strange to our ears. Therefore, we desire to get to know what these things purport to be. In fact, all Athenians and the foreigners sojourning there would spend their leisure time at nothing but telling something or listening to something new. Paul now stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, that's when he starts his speech. So I think we better break right now. You can read that speech. It's very, very well known among Christians. It's a well-known speech. It should be anyway, because it was how Paul addressed the Greeks in Athens and the sort of school of philosophy, the philosophers who like to talk about everything all the time. They just like to talk about new ideas. They enjoyed that. It's not such a bad thing, really, but the enlightenment that comes through the good news about the resurrection of Jesus is called good news because it's supposed to be better. It's believed to be better than these philosophies that go all around talking about, you know, all around all sorts of concepts and ideas, but there's no truth involved in these. In the final analysis, they don't arrive at some place. They just keep talking and reasoning, right? But reasoning is different when it's done with the idea of truth in mind. When there's a truth, when you're reasoning from using logic, that's a different thing, right? Now, there were undoubtedly schools of logic, too, that were outside of the biblical teaching, too. But logic is something that is inherent in Christian belief, different from the logic, or it's more, it's not really necessarily different, but it's more intense. It's more, it's deeper, it's more thorough, it's more, what's the word? Unwavering, perhaps? Or it's more, well, it is that, but it's more complete. You know, the logic is so refined in Christian thought. And it just happens because of the belief in the resurrection and the belief in truth, the belief in the idea of truth as being, you know, something that is real, rather than just something that's sought for, right? That's the idea of the Christian teaching. So we're done for today. I love you very much. Have a wonderful day. I hope you enjoyed the study today. This is Little Children. This is on my behalf. And before I say that, it's July 8th, 2023, 19:05 hours. And on my behalf, this is Star and Cammie saying bye for now.